The Fan on Demand. If Bob didn't say it, then it probably ain't true. This is Primetime Sports with a man who cannot tell a lie. Bob McCown. Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number three of the radio program for this Thursday, the 18th of September. I'm Bob McCown. That is Ken Reed. You don't have to wave.
I like to wave.
When Osmak introduces you on at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock or whenever you happen to come on, I mean, do you wave all the time?
I actually kind of do.
Give it the Queen's wave?
I give her this one. Little side wave. Hey, how's it going? Good to see you. Thanks for coming.
It's not your first rodeo, you know?
No, but I'm a nice guy. I like to wave. How's it going? Watch people walking back there. Who's back there? Oh, there goes Walsh. Hey.
Yeah, he's leaving.
Back's turn. Yeah.
When the producer leaves, you know he's had enough of you.
Oh, I know.
He not only left the control room, he's left the building, I think, almost. Because there's nothing left for him to do. I don't know what he does anyway. Very little.
I think quite a bit by the looks of today's fantastic lineup.
I think the associate producer did most of the legwork on all of this stuff today.
He's digging that.
With his Notre Dame hat. The Catholic school. Catholics are unbeaten, huh? Yeah, 3-0. They played anybody yet? Who'd they play? Played the Sisters of the Poor. They played William and Mary. And they played Nick and Tony. Those are the three games so far. They're 3-0.
They play the University of Phoenix yet?
Michigan lost an inter-squad game earlier this year. Let's put it all in context. This is not your father's Michigan Wolverines. You know what I mean?
Osmak was at the Notre Dame-Michigan game.
Why?
She bought a weekend trip to the Chicago area, the sports fantasy weekend. She saw the Cubs Friday, Michigan-Notre Dame Saturday, and the Bears and Bills on Sunday.
Have you been to the Dome? Have you been to the the Gold Dome?
No.
Pretty impressive.
Pretty groovy.
South Bend, Indiana, man.
Well, you know where Ivanka got that trip.
Best thing about it is Notre Dame and the road leading out.
Oh, yeah. It's not a hip place. Notre Dame's only, 8,000-9,000 undergrads. Small school.
Well, you got to be reasonably smart.
You got to be intelligent to get in there, yeah. I didn't apply.
I'm not sure what the relevance of that statement is.
I just wanted to clarify in case anybody was wondering.
Here's Don Banks from Sports Illustrated. Hello, Banks.
Hi, guys.
Been to South Bend?
I've been there one time. I covered one game, and ironically, it was the very night that Joe Carter hit the walk-off homer to win the 1993 World Series.
So you missed it?
No.
Was it an afternoon game?
To clarify, it was the day. I did a day game, and as I was my flight the next morning was out of Chicago, and as I was driving between South Bend and Chicago, I was listening to Game 6. And I was on that road leading to O'Hare when Joe Carter hit.
Wow.
And gave Toronto fans probably the greatest moment in Blue Jays history, obviously.
Well, probably true. I would say it was one of the probably five greatest moments in baseball history.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of drama, walk-off home runs.
You can't put it up. It wasn't a game seven, but you can put it right there.
Right there.
In the next level down, I would think, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's right there.
Mazeroski, Bobby Thompson.
I mean, 92 is the first time, but I still think the way that unfolded and the way that series was so crazy. Remember, what was it, the 15-14 game or something like that?
16-15, I think it might have been.
Yeah, there you go.
You know. And then they come back and lose 2-0 or something the next night.
It was like, football score 16-15.
Oh, that was unbelievable. That whole series was pretty amazing in retrospect. Anyway, we are going off on a tangent here, which we occasionally do. We are digressing. So before we get to games, and I get that people want to know a little bit about games, and we haven't had a chance to really talk much about on the field because it's all this off the field stuff. But look, here's what I will acknowledge to you. I have been a long suffering Cleveland Browns fan.
That's redundant.
Yes. And thank you. And as am I. And I pay most attention to the Cleveland Browns and not much to the rest of the National Football League, except when there's a big game on that it piques my interest for whatever. I can't honestly say I'm one of those crazed football fans. Let's start with that. So I put that out there for you. I must say I'm having a real tough time getting interested in what's going on the field. It's like, I feel like if I'm going to watch a football game, I got to take a shower afterwards.
Yeah.
Because of all this other nonsense that's going on. And I'm get angry about this and how it's being dealt with. And I don't go through the litany of things and the things that make me mad. And I'm wondering, as a guy who makes his living on a daily basis covering and writing about the National Football League, are you in a different place right now than you have been in the past?
Yeah, I think I am. I think that's fair. I think everybody has felt, well, I shouldn't say everybody. I think the people that absolutely live and breathe for the NFL and play in six fantasy leagues, they probably have not let this into their bubble as much as the more casual fan. But I agree. I think it has felt like it's a kind of dirty league to cover the last few weeks. And I can't help but think that when the dollars get big enough and when they get ridiculous, and that's where the money has been in the NFL for, I don't know, at least through Goodell's tenure, most of it, big money taints things. And I think you're seeing some of the effects of how the money has gotten out of control. And you're seeing the drive for profits put, I think, above almost everything else. And now everybody's recalibrating, and Roger Goodell is scrambling to put forward, you know, his best possible effort on domestic violence and a lot of fronts. But I wrote a column yesterday that maybe Mark Cuban was right. Maybe what he was really talking about when he said, you better not, you know, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. He was talking about hubris, and he's talking about a league that has gotten so monolithic and so popular and so insanely powerful that they think anything wrong. They think they print money, and therefore their judgments and their wisdom is infallible. And in some ways, I think it has created kind of that dirty feeling in a lot of people's minds. Like, I love the sport, I love the theater, but it's wearing on us, the litany of negativity that's just flowing from this league right now.
You know, the word that comes to mind more than any other is arrogance.
Yeah.
They're so arrogant. And I even go back to something that's so irrelevant in terms of what we've seen since then. You know, the story a few weeks ago about the National Football League demanding that the halftime entertainers at the Super Bowl pay it some kind of license or appearance fee. It's like there's a bar here, and they're so far over it, or a line, and they've gone so far past it, they're not operating rationally anymore.
That's exactly what I wrote. That basically, and I used the word arrogant and arrogance throughout that column. That's what hubris is. When you start believing the hype and you believe that you're so above everyone else that, you know, you lose accountability. And I think this league has taken a lot of well-deserved criticism and heat from fans who seem to be fed up, from sponsors who seem to be fed up, and have said we deserve better than what we've gotten from the league. And I do think, as ugly as this all has been, I do think the league goes forward changed for it. And I'm not saying...
You do, huh?
Yeah, it's to a degree. Yeah, I think the commissioner's office has been weakened. I think he has realized that they finally, you know, they allowed too much and went too far, and in our judgments are perfect, and they realize just how much blowback there can be if they make mistakes that are glaring and grievous and really insulting to a lot of people. And I think I think they come out of this a little chastened and realize that they're not as all powerful as they thought they were. And maybe Mark Cuban had a point when he said, just be careful, you know, don't overreach. There's always a price to pay for, you know.
Well, there's a judgment day for everybody, right?
Absolute power.
What do you make of the commissioner's complete and total disappearance over the last week or 10 days? Is that the right thing or the wrong thing?
Well, probably the right thing from not blundering and becoming even more of the story, but very, very small on the leadership front and very much sending the message, we are under siege, we are in the bunker, we are going to lob out statements, we're going to lob out some hirings that we hope placate the issues that we helped create and bungled in response to. And I think he, you know, Bob, this is a league that fines players and coaches for not being accountable and standing up and answering questions for the media.
Good point.
Fines them. And then where's the owners and the commissioner not being held to a higher standard, being held to the same standard, let alone a higher standard. They hide. You know, the owners send their coaches and GMs out. The Wilfs in Minnesota finally showed their face yesterday. I thought it was a pretty let's read our talking points and repeat.
Oh, it was appalling, wasn't it?
They did the right thing.
Do the right thing.
Yeah.
But it was pretty...
It was appalling.
They at least showed up, but it was pretty weak performance.
But they had...
hasn't even done that.
They had corporate guns to their heads.
Yes.
Yep.
That's why they were there, and we all knew it.
Exactly. And they had the governor of Minnesota, who just helped them break ground on a new stadium, saying they did the wrong thing. They had a senator from Minnesota saying they did the wrong thing, and they had sponsors, most of all, saying they did the wrong thing. And it's kind of easy to come around to the decision that you might have done the wrong thing when everybody is singing the exact same tune. I don't give them a lot of credit for correcting that mistake. Boy, they've done more than we've seen in some cases.
Don, where did that Minnesota Vikings press conference rank up for you in terms of insincere press conferences? First, for me, it just looked like the PR person wrote the message, do the right thing, do the right thing. And I swear they said it over 30 times, no matter what they were asked.
I know they don't. Ziggy Wilf is not comfortable in that setting, and that's one reason why they didn't run him out there. But sorry, you're the where the buck stops. You're the guy who gets to hold up the shiny trophy with the confetti falling on your head if you happen to win it. So you have to get out there and face the music when the results are not good and when you have explaining to do. There's an old saying, and I will clean it up, but when you have to eat crap, don't nibble. And it means get out there and face it head on and take every question. I felt like they did what was the old Nixon White House limited something hangout. It was very limited in what they were. They wanted to say their piece and they wanted to repeat it, and that's all. They didn't want to look back and say, you know, why they doubled back, and they tried to actually say that it was not about dollars or corporate pressure when we know that was a huge component.
With Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. Okay, let's put that aside for the time being. It's not that we won't readdress this in the days and weeks to come, because it's an omnipresent story, and it doesn't, I mean, so far, we've gone a couple days without another explosion, but...
Well, last night we had...
Jonathan Dwyer.
We had another one last night.
The Cardinals got arrested yesterday.
Yeah, I thought it was a couple days ago. It was just yesterday, right?
No. Details of that are coming out, too, and they're not too good.
Yeah, they're not pretty.
Yeah.
The difference being he's not a superstar, so they can quickly and easily make him disappear.
Well, they could have. I'm not sure about now. I'm sure. I think the one thing that's come out of this is that we all have our spidey senses, as the kids like to say, on full alert right now when it comes to these things. This is not the kind of thing that gets two lines in the newspaper anymore, and people kind of look at it and go, oh, I don't even know who he is.
At what point, though, does
he... No, I don't mean that. I mean they can wipe him off the roster pretty easily.
Oh, right. Yeah, sure.
He's not a superstar.
I got you.
So they can make a really principled stand, as this league has always been willing to do with the scrubs of the league.
Yeah. Is this going to get to a point where we just, and I don't want to say this, but where we just say, okay, yeah, it happened again, it happened again, it happened again, because it's happening so much. Like, when these stories come out now, it's just kind of, okay, yep, another guy.
I think it's the
another guy.
Interesting is, in the case of Dwyer, his arrest was yesterday. The event was the 21st and 22nd of July.
That's right.
Different world ago. That was right before camp opened.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know that Ray Rice was going to go the way it went, and obviously everything else that followed.
Yeah, I think it's incumbent. I think it's incumbent upon the media, and I don't like to point fingers at ourselves or suggest that we are the moral compass of North America by any stretch of the imagination. But I think it's incumbent upon those of us who have a platform, a public platform, to make sure that this story doesn't just fade away, that there's a conclusion to this, if it's a conclusion as possible, and that we continue to present, hey guys, these are not isolated instances. This is a systemic situation, a systemic problem that cannot and should not be swept under the rug.
No, I agree. I don't think we should tolerate it, because I think in turn then we reflect the fans that they deserve better than they're getting, and we're in a role to hold some feet to the fire.
Football. The Saints are 0-2 with mathematically now about an 11% chance of making the playoffs, which is kind of silly, but we should also put that in context. The Blue Jays were once had about a 90% chance of making the playoffs. We know how that worked out.
The POF standings.
Right. So Saints 0-2, the Bills 2-0. Which is a bigger surprise to you?
Saints being 0-2, but they're going to make the playoffs. And as I wrote the other day, I did a perception versus reality. I don't believe their Super Bowl dreams are, a lot of people say, well, they can make the playoffs maybe, but that's a long shot. But they'll never make the Super Bowl now. I think that's a bunch of hooey. This is a team that could go 8-0 in that dome like they did last year. And you look at their road schedule remaining. They've obviously got 6 road games left. There's one of them against a team that made the playoffs last year. That's at Carolina in middle of the season, October 30th. This is a team I still think is going to have a really long, sustained run of success. Their defense has not been what we expected, but in reality, they make 2 plays and they're 2-0. They've lost by a field goal, 1 in overtime, 1 in Cleveland, where they just simply blew a coverage and let a guy down to about the 15-yard line. But it's surprising. I think the Bills, frankly, I have a friend who's a Bills fan, and I said until they get past 5-2, which is what they were in 2011 with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
That's right.
Great, you shouldn't pay attention, because we have seen the Bills get their hopes up, get their fans' hopes up a lot recently. And just let's see if they can put their head down and keep stringing good performances together. But so far, they got a nice formula. I love their defense. I said that all along.
They've been good for a couple of years.
About E.J. Manuel, and he's doing what he needs to do, taking care of the football.
Bills always do this, though. They always have a fine start, and then they always end up, with 6 wins on the season.
Well, they sped up the bit more than
thing.
Once. Yeah, more
their
than
thing.
Once.
But, they have some good karma going right now between the sale of the team and Jim Kelly's almost miraculous recovery and the way that the team rallied in the home opener around a 1-0 team. It was from all appearances a pretty cool scene at Ralph Wilson Stadium, and I think they should feed on that and ride this as far as they can. They've got another game I believe they can win this week.
Well, the other thing that was happening there too, and I'm told the atmosphere was quite electric. The other thing that happened too was this is the first time Buffalo Bills fans have been able to collectively get together and celebrate the fact that those bastards from Toronto are not going to be able to steal our football team. And don't undersell the
day for Ralph Wilson, who obviously passed in March, and they got to take his name on, put his name up on the Wall of Fame. So I think there were a lot of factors, but first and foremost, I think it was kind of a catharsis of we are not losing our football team.
I would be remiss if I didn't take the opportunity, because I have so few of them, to mention my Cleveland Browns, who did beat the New Orleans Saints. I think it's the first home opener victory since I was an embryo. So we're going. I mean, Jim Brown. I think was still at Syracuse University the last time this happened. This is a sad sack organization, but they had a comeback that nearly resulted in a victory against the Pittsburghs, and then a a pretty decent performance, at least certainly offensively, against a very good New Orleans team. We think. What do you make of this group?
I'm buying them.
I like the
defense. I don't think they're not a shutdown defense, but I think their defense is going to keep them in most games. And I've been pounding the drum for Hoyer for a while now. I went through there in preseason and wrote that I thought Hoyer, if he loses his job, it's not going to be till October. He's the best option now. He's proven that. That's why Mike Pettine wanted this guy, because he could. He has a little something. When the game gets tight, I think he plays pretty well, and people are not calling for the rookie at this point, and I think they saw last week that Hoyer has this team firmly behind him, and they I think they have a little good karma themselves. And now it would be better if Josh Gordon wasn't suspended for 10 games, but they didn't have Ben Tate at running back. They didn't have Jordan Cameron at tight end, and they somehow still
beat
a Saints team that is loaded.
It's it may not be a miracle, but it's as close as they come in Northern Ohio. We got to get out of here. You got things to do. I can't promise we'll talk only football next week, but you never know. Thank you, Mr. Banks.
Thanks, guys.
Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. Here's a guy who needs no introduction.
Go ahead.
But I'll give him one anyway, won't I?
You should.
I probably should. He's been doing an awful long time. He is an iconic figure in the sport, and he will move from his longtime perch at CBC to his new perch as one of the play-by-play voices of NHL hockey on Rogers. Here is Bob Cole. Mr. Cole, how are you?
Robert, I'm pretty good, and how are you doing, Ken?
I'm doing great, Bob. Pleasure to talk to you as always.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So you've come over to the dark side. I know it probably wasn't a whole lot of choice on your part, welcome to the Sopranos, the Rogers family. And, we occasionally eat our own, but generally speaking, we protect them. So we're thrilled to have you with us. And I mean, how do you look forward to this umpteenth season of hockey, but with a new parent corporation running the thing?
You know what, Bob? I finished my last season past, that is, in Chicago.
Yep.
That seventh game with L.A. And I was done, and I had a great, great run in the playoffs with Columbus, Pittsburgh, the Rangers, Columbus, Chicago, L.A., and I was done, and I didn't know for how long I was going to be done. So I left and I went to Florida and tried to relax, and I did. And then I got a phone call from the president of broadcasting with Rogers, Scott Moore. And he said, Bob, we'd like you to be on our team, just like that. And I said, you know what? That's wonderful. The good Lord has been very good to me, allowing me to keep going like this. John Shannon reminded me, this is six decades. What?
Wow.
So anyway, I said, okay, I'll buy it. And, I'm a lucky, lucky guy, very fortunate. And I thank Rogers for calling me. And when you said Bob Cole and Rogers sounds weird, I think it sounds beautiful.
Amen.
Good for you. Life doesn't change that much. I mean, you get to still do what you've done, as you said, for six decades now. But is there a difference that you've been able to perceive between the Hockey Night in Canada CBC way and what will be the Hockey Night in Canada Rogers way?
You know what, Bob? We just had a get-together in Toronto.
I know.
Well over 100, as you know.
Yep.
And the main speakers, I listened to Scott Moore. I listened to Gord Cutler. I met and talked with Ed Hall, the executive producer. My goodness, you can't help but be impressed. They had been working all summer putting this together, getting everybody psyched up. They did a marvelous job. They were very professional, and they mean business. And I'm just so happy to be part of it. A little part of it, maybe, but I'm glad I'm there, you know?
Bob, I always love talking to you and picking your brain. And as a broadcaster, people always say you have to find your voice. And I have no idea when I'm going to find mine. I'd like to ask you when you found yours and when you've discovered that that you arrived and you were just confident to be yourself on the microphone when you were doing play-by-play, when you just found that comfort zone?
I don't know if I found it yet. You know, that's a fair question. I think I was a brash young boy listening to Foster Hewitt Saturday nights and Wednesday afternoons. They'd repeat the game, and I found myself repeating what Foster did Saturday, Wednesday afternoon, and I was loving it. And any time we played hockey out in the ponds, the rivers, wherever we were outdoors, wintertime, I could be carrying the puck, but broadcasting. You know, I'm lucky, like I said a moment ago to Bob. Very lucky, very fortunate, and I just love what I do. I still get butterflies, Bob and Ken, before the game. And if that keeps going, I know I can feel the game. I think I know what the players feel. I think I feel the excitement of what I'm looking at in the Chicago Stadium and the Bell Center in Montreal and places all around the league, really. Even Columbus. It was so wonderful to see the fans in Columbus turn out against Pittsburgh and nearly beat them. I mean, hockey is great, and I believe it's going to get better now. There's going to be more games than you dare to think about, and it's going to be fantastic.
I hesitate to even ask this question because I'm pretty sure I know what the answer is. It probably will be perceived by some as a stupid question. It might very well be, but after this long, doing this many games, you still are emotionally as committed as you were in the past? I mean, there's not, you can't tell me there wasn't a game in the last year or two where you said, well, I got to do it. That's my job, but I'm not really that into it. Or no, because there's a part of me that thinks he really is still excited about doing this job.
Guess I must be crazy, but
not really at all.
Look, it's been my life, and like I just said, I really do get butterflies. Still get them.
That's quite amazing.
Yeah, well, I guess it's amazing, but not for me, Bob. It's something that I've look. When you finally put everything together in the morning, talk to the coach, and then the other coach, and you get set in the afternoon, and you go to the rink along with everybody else, and you get to the booth, and there's your place. Right there, near center ice, maybe a little too high up in some buildings, but still, and then the guys come out. All the guys you now have met and have, you know, and you know them. And now you're in the game, and the crowd, there's 20,000 going nuts, and you're in the game, and the anthem is over in Chicago. If you can't get a thrill from this, I don't know where you should go, but I love this. And someday somebody's going to say, we don't want you anymore. And I'm going to say, darn it, I knew that was coming.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, but I understand, and I'll go.
Bob, all those great moments. I know you were there in 72 calling it on the radio side. Do you have one favorite call that you had over the year, be it a goal, a save? Is there just one call that was above all the rest?
Ken, that's a real tough question.
No softballs, Bob.
You know, when I play tapes, and I have a pretty good collection by this time. I say tapes, CDs now, but yeah, tapes too. Mm-hmm. And I go back to the Salt Lake game, the gold medal game, and Sakic. And I go back to goals by Wayne. And I go back to Messier and on a break in Edmonton, and nobody is going to catch him. And it must have been a World Cup game where Mario Lemieux is taking off out of his own zone down the left boards. It's a 2-on-1, and I look over and I say, and look who's with him, Joe Sakic. And the two of them, well, they scored, of course. But, you know, this I get goosebumps thinking about it, you know what I mean? I hope that continues, Bob. I really do.
Did you have, let me ask you about your relationship to Foster Hewitt. What was, I don't know if you know this, but I started my career working for Foster at CKFH and became quite friendly with him. Got to know him, I think, pretty well. Did you have a longstanding relationship, a close relationship with Foster Hewitt?
Yes. And I saw your show and I loved it, by the way.
Thank you.
And I heard you mention Foster, CKFH. I walked in there one day, Bob, having grown up listening to Foster Hewitt Saturday nights, as I said, and again Wednesday afternoon. They'd repeat it on the government station here in St. John's.
Yeah.
And I had a soccer injury, football injury. I find it hard to say soccer. I know you don't like that game, but I played a lot of it. I was 6 months bedridden, and I had Foster and all the pictures of the Canadians and the Maple Leafs in my bedroom, and I had Foster. And then I got him again Wednesday. And now I'm living the game that I heard Saturday night, and it just went on. I walked into his office back in 1956, and I had a little five-minute example of what I do at home in the local radio station of a hockey game.
Right.
And it was two club teams, meant nothing to Foster Hewitt. So I said to the lady, would you take this and give it to Foster Hewitt and have him listen to it and then write me and tell me I should think about a banker's job or whatever? Mm-hmm. And she said, just a moment. She called him, and he said, come in. And I said, same thing. Would you like to listen to it and then write me sometime when you get a chance? And I'd love to hear what you think. He said, why don't we listen to it now? Well, I picked myself up off the floor and walked with him to the recording room, put it on. I could tell he was interested and listened. We talked for, Bob, honest, we talked for 2 hours, just about hockey broadcasting.
Wow. That doesn't surprise me, really, because he was that kind of guy.
Oh, yeah.
He did have time for people, you know?
Wow.
And he made time for people.
Yeah, I was very, very lucky. And he told me things that I think I still try to do. Yep, you're going to make a few mistakes. No doubt about it. The game is so fast. But it's incredibly exciting. And if you can enjoy what you do, and I do, you just hope that everybody listening and watching the game is enjoying the game. He told me something I've never forgotten. Bobby said, someday, I think you'll be up here doing hockey. And when you do, I've told this story many times, and when you do and you go home and your friends say, Bob, I watched the game Saturday. It was fantastic, exciting. What a great game. And they don't mention your name. You've now done your job, and I'm happy with that.
How interesting. We wish you many, 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 many more years of broadcasting, and both Kenny and I and everybody thank you for all the years and all the enjoyable nights that you've given us, and as we said, we hope there's lots more, and just remember, it's not CBC anymore, Cole, okay?
Thank you, Kenny and Bob. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Well, we'll see you soon, I hope. There is the legendary Bob Cole, now part of the play-by-play team for the NHL on Rogers.
I know we're supposed to act cool and that Bob's our coworker and stuff like that, but that guy, he's one of my hockey heroes. He's right up there with any player. I mean, everybody grew up listening to that guy, but for a guy who wanted to go into announcing and sports broadcasting and being a play-by-play guy, man, that's as far up as you can get is talking to Bob.
Well, you know, and I'm trying, I mean, without disrespect to anybody else, and there's a lot of great play-by-play guys, and some of them are friends of mine, and I respect them tremendously. What you have in Bob Cole is almost like the second generation of hockey broadcasters. Mm-hmm. Foster obviously was the first. He was the guy everybody patterned themselves after. Now, Foster's career was winding down by the 1970s. You know, he actually kind of, if I remember correctly, sort of came out of semi-retirement to do the 72 series. Mm-hmm. He'd left television. He turned that over to his son, Bill, principally, and was still doing some radio games. But even then, he didn't do all the radio games. Ron Hewitt was doing some of the radio games. But there was nobody out there that pretended that Foster Hewitt wasn't the king.
Right.
Wasn't the guy who not only did it better, he invented it. No, Foster Hewitt was a guy who couldn't look at the guy before him and say, this is how you do it.
Right.
He did it from day one. I don't doubt for a second that over the years, I mean, we're going back into the 1920s,
Yeah.
I'm sure he changed. I'm sure he adapted. But he did it principally on his own.
You are who you are.
And
then Bob and Danny came along. Danny Gallivan.
The late Danny Gallivan.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys, I mean, I guess to some extent, Bill Hewitt was sort of the next generation guy, but he grew up with on his father's knee and sitting beside him in the booth and whatever. And then there was Gallivan and Cole, who came directly, were spawned directly from the origin, Foster Hewitt. And all of the great broadcasters of today are sort of the next generation.
The next generation. So, and to me, Bob Cole, the reason I love listening to his games, it's emotion. It's not this stat, this stat, this number, this number. It's emotion. To me, the game is emotion, and I know that's dreamy, and it's, you know, it's fantasizing, and it's a boyish charm about the game, but to me, the game is emotion. That's not necessarily the opinion of a lot of people today, but he brings me into the game. My wife can watch a game if Bob Cole's doing play-by-play, and my wife doesn't like sports, but my wife appreciates great broadcasting. She's in the business as well. She can listen to Bob Cole. Bob Cole, the thing about Bob Cole, he turns a 3 into a 7, a 5 into an 8, and a 6 into a 10. He can make an average game just so, so fantastic. He just brings the viewer in there, and I thank him for that. I think it's an amazing, amazing skill.
We are thankful that he will be joining the folks here at Rogers. I was going to say joining us, but I got nothing to do with hockey. I don't know what you're doing. You doing anything?
I might do an update during an intermission or something like that.
Really? They didn't give me that.
So I'm one up on you there? You probably said no to them, though.
No, the bastards lost my phone number, I think.
You're in here 4 to 7 every day.
It's not like they can't find me. They just forgot about me.
The boys know where to find you. Well, now they're all down at the...
Cole's 81 years old, and they're giving him another year. Maybe they're sending me a message.
Yeah, but Bob's pretty dang good at it.
Oh, hang on. Let me get the knife out of my back. 24 before the hour. Primetime continues. I probably earned that one. On the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Prizes like no other. From a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Lido missed the boat that day. He left the shack. But that was all he missed. And he ain't coming back. Added to a stone bar and a gin joint car. He made a stop. Just like.
Play Name That Tune.
You know what? I don't know this song.
Artist?
Yeah, I usually pretty good at Name That Tune.
Boz Scaggs, isn't it? There you go.
No, da, da,
so you know the song, da, da. But you just don't know the artist.
Well, today on Name That Wrestler, I knew it was Bob Backlund. I just didn't know Bob Backlund's name, and I lost to Bret Hart and Jimmy Corderas. Bret Hart, champion of Name That Wrestler.
See, if it was you answering that question, it would have been Boz Scaggs or Ken Reed.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that how you do it?
Yeah, well, because, I could put or Bob McCowan under Ric Flair and The Undertaker.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Now, this is the part of the show.
Yes.
Like we're sort of indoctrinating Reed into the core group of this program.
That can't be good.
You're telling me.
Yeah.
Reed principally has been a fill-in in the case of an extreme emergency Friday afternoon roundtable guy.
Backup to the backup.
You may have left a couple of backups out there.
To the backup.
Backup to the backup to the backup to the backup.
Right.
But whatever. So now you're getting a greater profile on this program.
Huge.
What you need to understand is the last segment of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I direct the conversation and pose questions to you.
I thought it was the other way around.
No. Now it's the other way around. The last segment, you're supposed to take command. Talk about the things, address the subjects you want to, and ask questions of me.
Oh, okay. Like the day I wrote, well, that was for Blair, I wrote up 10 questions for him.
You really wrote them down?
Yeah, but they were just weird ones because I just tried to make him laugh because he bet I couldn't make him laugh.
But oh, that's what that was about?
Yeah, exactly.
How'd that work out?
Didn't laugh.
He didn't?
No.
Do you remember any of the questions?
Yeah, not really, no. They couldn't have been that good.
Yeah, no?
Yeah, no. they're so mostly Expos answer. Questions and stuff like that, because Blair covered the Expos.
Is Ozmak busy? Can we get her in here? Like now?
Ivanka, are you around? She might be around.
She couldn't get, if she was downstairs, she'd probably in makeup
right
fast.
Now. Probably in makeup.
Yeah.
So you want me to ask you questions?
Girls. What?
You want me to ask you questions, or you're going to ask me questions?
Is that what I said? No. The last segment, we reverse roles. You play the host, and I play the sidekick.
Oh.
So you ask me things. Or you can say things and say, Bob, what do you think of that? You can make a statement if you'd like. Do you have a strong opinion on anything? You haven't had one in all the time you've been here this week.
Well, I was going to say, aren't you
supposed hoping there's a first time coming.
Aren't you supposed to be opinionated on this show?
It would be good. Do you have an opinion on anything?
Well, I don't really
apparently
like this.
Not.
I don't really like this segment. I have an opinion on that.
Great.
Read any good books lately, Bob?
Well, I read yours.
Yeah. So
oh, that, no, you said good.
You said good. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, your book's out now, huh?
It's in trickling into bookstores. It's called Hockey Card Stories.
It's trickling into bookstores?
Yeah, because you wrote a book. It kind of trickles out first, and the official launch is October 1st.
That's not what happened with mine.
Yours
it didn't
just
trickle out.
Everywhere at once.
Was bang, sold out.
Yeah, but if your name's on it, it's instant bestseller. I'm just a young punk trying to make my way.
24,000 copies they printed.
Really?
Yeah, they were gone in 3 weeks.
I think we printed 240 for me.
240 copies?
Yeah, I think so. I gave bunch of them away. No, they printed a bunch of copies. In fact,
wait,
Bob.
No, wait. So I got to tell this true story. So yesterday in the mail, I got a copy of the book a couple of months ago.
Oh, yes, my book.
Yeah, whatever. So I get a copy of Reed's book. Now, was it a galley or was it a real copy? I don't even remember. Was it a galley? Was it a real one?
It was a real one. Yeah, you got the galley a while back, the real one.
I got the galley and the real one, too?
Yeah, you got the real one yesterday.
So, well, no, yesterday I got the real one. I think the one I got before was the galley, which
yes,
I read.
Right.
So I open it up, and Reed's sitting there. And I said, oh, great. What am I going to do with another copy of Reed's book that I won't read? And he said, well, you can give it to me because I can sell it. And I did. I gave it back to you.
Yeah, I sold it for $20.
Did you really?
No.
Oh.
I gave it to Don Collins.
You took it from me and gave it to Collins?
I didn't take it from you. You gave it to me.
No, you asked for it. Those are two entirely different things.
I re-gifted the gift that you gave me.
I
well, you didn't need
you
it. You already
that.
Have a copy.
I acknowledge that.
By the way, Bob, I'll be signing copies of my book in Kitchener this Saturday, A Word on the Street, from 3 to 3:30. And I'll be at the Toronto version of Word on the Street at the ECW booth this Sunday, signing copies of my book. If you'd like to come by, I'll get you one for $20. I'll even sign it for you.
I got one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need it ruined by your signature.
No?
Well, I think the chances of me reselling the book with your signature in it are less.
How? Okay, hear about this. How much?
Because I'm not into gifting.
How much could you sell my book for with your signature on it?
A lot more than you can sell it with your signature on it.
You should
tell you
sign.
Right
how about this? I will.
How about I go to the signing in Kitchener?
Yeah, how about
you want to go to the winery?
Come with me. I'll get a bunch of my books and I'll get you to sign them and then I'll take them and sell them in Kitchener.
I love your book and I admire your style, but the pay is so cheap, I won't go there for a while.
You don't make a lot of money selling books, do you?
People don't. I don't understand why people do it. I did it once.
Passion project, labor of love.
And then they wanted me to do a second one, and I said, okay, here's how much I want. And they went,
really? But I love my nerdy hockey cards. I talk about them, so why not write about them? Hockey Card Stories, in stores now. Find bookstores everywhere.
You know what? It's a great bathroom book.
It is. It's.
I wrote one. I know a good bathroom book.
You know what? 59 visits to the bathroom and you'll be done in my book.
Well, see, you need more than that. I had 100 arguments, so you needed 100 visits to the bathroom.
100 visits, yeah. Oh, plus the intro and the acknowledgments that you're in.
How many days would that be, though, for the average person?
59. Depends what you eat.
It does, you know, and depends on the person. For some people, it could be 2 weeks. And for other people, it could be years.
It could be.
Depends on your digestive system.
It totally does. It took me 3 years to write your
book. Will you be back again tomorrow?
No.
Thank the Lord. See you tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.